Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. It is a blazingly hot day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York City. I can think of no other way to beat the heat than have a nice frosty beverage in the studio with some AC. We're looking about 72 in here instead of 98 out there. And really happy to have a couple people who I actually just met today. We probably passed each other like somewhere along the line, but I think this is actually our first time hanging out. I do remember seeing your website quite a while ago, and I've always been a fan of the 12 Bottle Bar. I think it's such a cool concept, and it's great that you have the book out. So welcome to the show, David and Leslie Salmonson.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
It's good to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the book just dropped about, what, a month or so?
No, it actually comes out officially on the 29th.
Oh, well, you first emailed me about a month or so ago.
Yeah.
I have a pre-press.
You won the first one.
Nice.
So it was down at Tales. We sold it there. It was, I think, the first place, and then couple places we've been signing books, so we're just in Boston.
So this heat is nothing to you because Tales is
it was
100% humidity.
But the good thing is you sweat out everything that you drink, so you just keep drinking.
I always say drink tons of water and never finish a drink.
Exactly.
Never finish a cocktail.
Nope.
Yeah. In those situations, Manhattan Cocktail Classic, Portland Cocktail Week, Tales of the Cocktail, much as you might like that cocktail, and I'm sure they're are tons out there that are super tasty. Never finish one.
You can always go back, right?
You can always go back, yeah. So, you guys have this book coming out. It's actually, it's a beautiful book.
Oh, thank you.
I love it.
Thanks to folks at Workman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice, yeah. It's, my background is in graphic design, so before I got into bars. It was the best decision I ever made to get into the bar.
No, they did a nice job. I mean, in the age of the glossy 50 recipe, full color, William Sonoma looking cocktail book, every book looks like that. We look a little bit different, which I like.
But it also captured, I think, a little bit more of our vibe, a little more of our style, more streamlined, simple.
So, okay, let's get into it. First of all, it started with the website, blog, really.
Yeah, right? In 2009 we came out, so it'll be 5 years this year.
Yeah, so tell me what inspired this. Was it like a home bar kind of thing, or like what?
So we were foodies for a long time. We would travel and go to all the big restaurants that you could probably think of, and the economy hit, and it was just we had to downsize. We had to watch our budget, if you will. We loved the craft cocktail scene was sort of hitting at that point too. David Meyer, who was a chef in Los Angeles, had come back to New York here, and then we met him in Los Angeles again, and he was the kind of guy who, even when it was busy in his very popular LA restaurant, would sneak out of the kitchen and say, "Oh, you got to try this. I got to make you something." So he came out one night, and we're sitting at the bar, and he's like, "You got to try this drink. I got to make you for it." And he puts in some ginger syrup and some honey syrup and a little light scotch and floats a little peaty scotch on top.
As you do, right?
He goes, "I met this dude called Sam Ross."
Yeah.
And he made this drink.
Right.
Yeah. And,
and no one in LA knew who Sam was at that point. No one knew anything about cocktail culture in LA at all. We're very much a microcosm out there. We're seasonal, we're locally sourced, and we just kind of do what we do. And we're always a little bit behind the curve because we're mellow. We just don't need to race to it.
I kind of disagree with that.
Yeah.
I think that the West Coast, they definitely have, there's definitely like an East Coast, West Coast, like gangster rap kind of thing. But it's like, at least the bar world is very like loving and like and supportive. So it wasn't like a thing at all.
I mean, it didn't have the same until Sam came out, which is what David did. Is he said, "I'm bringing Sam out. I'm having him create a cocktail program for us," and that's when Comsa opened and they opened the 8DNA program. And pretty much every bartender in Los Angeles went through those doors: Julian Cox, Marcos Tello, all those guys. So that was like the little beacon that went on. And of course, you had Eric Alpern out here too at the same time. So there was this little balancing act going on, and then it exploded.
So for us, it was really about how do we do that at home? We couldn't afford to go out every single night. You know, back then a cocktail was $10-$12. Now it's pushing 22.
Yeah, it's I totally agree. Yeah. Like the going out every night is it's fun, but yeah, it can be costly.
But
the
Leslie's in the business, so she, you know, she's as a journalist, she's out. I've got a day job. I often work, you know, a nice 12-hour shift. I come home, I put the kiddo to bed. She goes out and, you know, does what she needs to do, and it's just that practicality. You want to unwind, and then the key impetus was sort of the frustration. And as much as we love craft cocktails, there's only so many $70 esoteric bottles of spirits or liqueur you can go out and buy just to make one recipe with a quarter teaspoon.
Yeah.
And so it was that level of practicality for the home bartender. And I saw this real divide between what was going on in the craft cocktail movement. And of course, especially back then around 2009, it was consume, consume, consume. We want to make more spirits. We want to, you know, consume every heritage recipe we've forgotten. Let's make Swedish punch. But for the home bartender, when I'd go to friends' house, they weren't as interested in that. So I'm like, how can I fill this? How can I bridge this chasm? And how can we bridge this chasm together? And so that's kind of the impetus for the 12-bottle bar.
Huge sense of mystery for the average person as to what goes into a cocktail. And there is no mystery to it. You just have to kind of jump that hurdle. Now, of course, if you've got 15 different ingredients, that's another story. That takes enormous, you know, balletic choreography. But for a home bartender, once they get past the fear factor, you can do it. As long as you can pour and you can shake and you can stir. And we do that when we cook, so...
Yeah, I think, well, I was just thinking about that just now when you were talking about this. Like, it's kind of, you know, when you come across a dish that you really, really love, and it can be super simple. Like, I might pick up an idea from the Salt Lick Barbecue in Austin, Texas, or Driftwood, Texas, and then bring it back home, and then share that with friends. And, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, I learned this, like, kind of, like, barbecue hack from, you know, like, life hack from my buddy Damon. He learned it from this person, you know. So I remember my mom, like, grew up in a really small town in Oklahoma. She would, I always thought it was kind of weird, but later in life I realized, like, oh no, this is important. You know, she would pick up like a cake recipe or like, you know, something from like somebody else in my hometown. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, huh, she's got this on an index card. She got this from someone else who clearly like worked on it for a little bit, tweaked it. Same thing with cocktails. We do the same thing. And I think the community, the cocktail world, not just for like the industry, but for the home use and the home bartender, I think it, those kinds of things, you have a story that goes along with it too. You know, you've got like, oh man, I went over to David and Leslie's house and they made me a daiquiri, like an actual daiquiri. I didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. It's just rum and lime and sugar. It couldn't be any simpler.
That's a typical party at our house. Yeah. That is what our friends end up saying almost every time. And we say, see, you can do this. It's that simple. You can do this. Don't be scared.
Yeah.
And stop using whipped cream vodka.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe put that somewhere else.
To decide. Yeah.
That's for a different dinner party. Yeah. That might be a key party.
I think so.
That'll be the next trend.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the next time you guys come on the radio show.
A good bar, though, wouldn't it? Maybe.
Define good. No, I think, but I, like, you know, it's cool because like this, this actually inspired, an article that I was part of, article that I co-wrote for, Business Week. And I quoted you guys
really?
From your website.
When was that? I never saw that.
This was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Wow.
Cool.
That, they came to me and they were like, hey, Damon, what are the 3 essential bottles that you need in your bar? And I was like, and can you give us 6 cocktails that you can make with these 3 ingredients? You know, granted, like, maybe there's some, you've got some fresh citrus around.
Right.
Bitters, you know, yeah. Like those kinds of things. And they were like, can you give us 6 cocktails with these 3 bottles? And they were like, holy shit, you gave us over 20. Yeah.
I think, so, you mentioned, I do think I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking sours, right? Where do we start?
Where do you end?
Yeah.
People are like, wait, all I need is a spirit, some citrus, and some sugar?
Yeah.
And then you start listing for them. Their eyes go wide. And you go,
And not even citrus. You just need sours. Yeah. You need tamarind. You need, you know, whatever.
Anything that works. Citric acid. I mean, they all work.
Citric acid, lactic acid, like any kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, even like, okay, I've always threatened to just twist off and go and, like, drop off the grid and hide out in the woods and like make this gigantic flowchart. The reason why I haven't done it yet because it's a huge project.
Is this your Walden Pond or something?
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Producing infographics from the forest.
From the forest.
Yeah. So like, here's my flowchart. Here's a gimlet. Here's a gin gimlet. But if I move over here and turn it into rum, now it's a daiquiri. It's got a completely different name.
Yeah.
Let's keep it a gin gimlet, but I put some Angostura bitters in it. Now it's called a Bennett cocktail. You know, like they're so close. Yeah. There's so many cocktails, so many classic cocktails. A 50-50 and an Astoria. They're the same fucking cocktail, man. Except one has an orange twist, and the other one has a lemon twist.
Or you go off like half an ounce or a quarter of an ounce.
Absolutely.
And it's,
I want to name a cocktail.
That actually was one of the challenges for us in putting the book together is we really wanted to, I hope people find the drinks well curated. You know, it's a combination of, you know, there's probably 10-15% of the things that we came up with because it's our book, so we're allowed to, right? A lot of the others.
You have to.
Yeah, exactly. It's classic stuff. And then we reached out to, you know, everybody under the sun from the DeGroffs and the Gazregans and whatnot to up-and-coming bartenders that we were fans of to add stuff to this. And then it's just that curation to make sure that you aren't – every drink isn't a quarter of an ounce different than the last one. So
And we were tweaking classics, too. I mean, there would be a classic – the Brown Derby is a good example of that, where we played with it. We tasted it. And we're like, this doesn't taste right. And then it hit us. Grapefruit wasn't the same back then.
No,
things change.
Exactly.
So we had to really start. I mean, it's rocket science. It's not, of course. You just had to play with the citrus, and when we hit it, we're like, that's where it is.
I always add a little lemon juice to mine.
We add lime. We do pomelo and lime.
That makes all kinds of sense. That makes all kinds of sense.
And it's lovely. And it depends on the honey, too, right?
Absolutely.
You know? No orange honey. It's just poof.
I did a training seminar. It was one of the first things I did when I moved to New York City. I did a training seminar for the bar that I was working at the time based on sweeteners. Huh? I'm like, let's go through all these different sugars, the different agaves, different honeys. Like, they are all different.
Mm-hmm. Like, Demerara, Turbinado,
Kurumitsu, Japanese black sugars. Like, is it cane syrup or is it actual, like, is it sugar? Yeah. You know, like, it really all changes. And you're absolutely right. You know, think about, like, what just happened to us a few months back with the lime crisis. You know?
Yeah.
Have you seen the really ridiculous bartender tattoos of like
I survived the lime crisis.
Yeah, 2014. Yeah. Never forget.
We had an LA bartender who made up an entire menu without limes. It was like his big statement. You know, his and it was pretty clever. I mean, there are plenty of drinks you can do it with, and if you're dealing with a bottom line and you're a high volume bar, you know, you're not going to go out and buy limes by the bushel. It just doesn't make sense.
So. I mean, you're absolutely right. And you know, like, but thinking even like before the shortage of limes and after, I'd like to see what, like, where the sourcing of the limes comes from, and like what the flavor difference is. Mm-hmm. You know, like every time that we open the bar, we taste the juice that we have, that's been juiced fresh that day, and then we taste what's kind of left over from last night, just to see. You know, like, is it oxidized or is it still okay? Like,
what do you find usually?
I mean, I like to do it fresh.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
then
of
also,
course.
Let's talk about this. I mean, like, did you use like an electric juicer,
right?
Where you're just pouring the juice out of the shell, or did you use like Rashan, where you press it and then you're actually getting the oils from the shell as well?
We use a hand juicer at home because a home bartender's got doesn't.
So you're always getting a bit of that bitter oil, and it's funny that we got in a little. I didn't respond to it, but a little tiff on our mojito because we crushed we lightly muddle lime wedges, and somebody's like, no, never do that. It's like, well, see, in Cuba, they're using Angostura in their mojitos because they want the bitter. Tried it, don't really care for the Angostura personally, but if we get enough bitter out of those peels, you know, and if it cloudies it a little bit, it's a beach drink. It's like, you know, I don't want to, it's not a gimlet or something.
Also, it's so subjective.
It is. We don't want to be precious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and taste, as you said, it is subjective. That's the whole thing about cocktails. And we make the point again and again, drink what you like, because I may like gin, you may like rye, he may like brandy, whatever it is. And if you're lucky, you like all of them, but not everybody does.
Yeah.
So, and not everybody's going to like every drink because of your memories and your prejudices and all these things that go into it.
We were talking about this the other night with, you know, Tomas Estes?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We were hanging out with him down at Tails, and we were talking about how we could make a drink. Let's say, anyway, you're the bartender here. You make a drink, and you say, this is the drink that won greatest drink ever made in the universe. And your technique is flawless, and your ingredients are flawless, and you could give it to five people, and three of them might go, not for me. It's good, but it's not for me. And we were talking about the way that cocktails deliver to the soft palate much more, much in a different way than food does. And I think because of that, we tend to taste the flavors to a much greater degree. So that means the nuance is that, you know, there could be a 2-degree nuance that puts you off that I love.
Yeah. Right. I think, well, but also isn't part of this book and the people that get this book and they at home, you know, and they're entertaining guests, isn't that also part of it though? Because like,
it's
because
yeah.
it tastes totally subjective.
Right.
But if you make a drink, I feel like cocktails come with a story. They come with an experience.
Absolutely.
And so to me, it's like some of my favorite bartenders in the world don't know a cocktail from their left leg, you know, like but they're amazing bartenders working at some of the crappiest dive bars, and whatever drink that they pour for me, it's going to taste better because they have entertained and they've been a gracious host.
Absolutely.
And I think that's part of what this book, I think that's part of what like the 12 Bottle Bar in general is really, it's kind of like the backbone of that.
Well, certainly,
and I think it's not just for home bartending. I think it's for bartenders everywhere.
We are hoping, actually, in some ways, I don't think we realized that was something that was starting to happen, was the idea that, you know, we're moving into a simpler time. We went through the age of sort of overexpression and overly ingredientizing our cocktails, right?
Well, like 15... Because you guys are from the West Coast.
Well, yeah, exactly, right?
You guys do that.
But we do. You know, we throw everything in there. And I think everybody's stepping back now and saying, wow, simple really does work, just like with food. We don't need 10 ingredients. 3 can do the trick.
Absolutely.
And so we're noticing we're getting that response from bartenders saying, oh, we get that. You're saying simpler can be better because you have to push the envelope then. You got to push yourself to create more.
You can't hide behind anything.
No, nothing. There's no guys there to get through.
And it's a hard balance for us because we are nerds. I mean, we are certainly, you know, we have punch romaine in here, and, you know, it's like a Escoffier's
recipe. Oh, Escoffier's. I did that. Yeah. We had a Titanic dinner at Prime.
And it's my desert island pick because if you do it right, it is like the most glorious Cadillac margarita type drink you've ever had in your life. So it's a challenge because we wanted the book to be accessible, so we tried not to go too deep down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I just turned to the daiquiri. Speaking of,
and we really want people to not be afraid of anything they find in the book because to me, you know, we go to a lot of friends' parties. You know, there's a lot of light beer and coolers, but it's a very different experience of somebody going, "Hey, you want a drink? It's out in the back by the pool," versus somebody taking the time to make that daiquiri and saying, "Yeah, you know, I got this daiquiri. I went to Damon's bar and he made me this daiquiri, and he took 2 seconds to show me how to do it. You know, while he made it, I brought it home, and wow, now I am a bartender with a one-drink repertoire," and quite frankly, that's where I think we started.
The last word. It's equal parts, man. Yeah.
Right.
Equal parts. Right. Anyone can do it. You can free pour it. Yeah. It's delicious.
Well, that's why I order a lot of Negronis at bars because, we have an office, the company I work for, in Kalispell, Montana, and I stay at the Hilton when I go there, and I go into the bar, and I always order a Negroni because I know they have the parts, and I know they're not going to mess it up.
And you were talking about story, too. You'll notice if you look in the book, every cocktail tells a story before it. So before people start drinking this drink, I mean, they may just want to make the daiquiri because it's delicious, it's rum, they like that, but it tells you something, and we're hoping that it's experiential, that there's a little bit extra that comes to it, whether it's a quirky story or it's just something historical. Whatever it is, it gives it a little weight, so you're not just drinking a drink, you're drinking an experience.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I always tell my bartenders all the time, it's like, we're not, you know, man, the last thing you should think about as a bartender is making the drink.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a story.
Yeah.
Like, people want to hear that. And your guests at your home want to hear that, too. Mm-hmm. You know? Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, I'd like to talk about, like, because I'm on the page 216 here, the daiquiri, and which we've talked about quite a bit. But, you know, I could talk about the daiquiri forever.
Absolutely.
But I like the fact that you have variations on these drinks at the bottom of the page, which is great because then, you know what? You like that? Let's try this.
Customize, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Customize everything.
Take a quick break. We'll be right back with David and Leslie Solmanson.
Yeah.
Michter's Whiskey is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. If you drink the whiskey that warmed General Washington's troops at Valley Forge, does that make you a patriot? Not necessarily, but it indicates you appreciate that Michter sets the standard for highest quality, limited production whiskeys. America's first whiskey distilling company, Michter's rich history dates back to 1753, when a farmer in Schaeferstown, Pennsylvania, distilled his first batch of whiskey from Hardy Rye. At one point, a master distiller left his family's well-known distillery to join Michter's so he could be at a smaller, less cost-conscious company where he could make the finest whiskey, cost be damned. Ask your bartender or retailer for Michter's whiskey today. Chatham Imports is the national sales agent for Michter's Distillery. For more information, please visit www.michters.com. That's www.michters.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. In the studio today, I'm really psyched to be chatting with my buddies David and Leslie Solomonson. Well, I'm going to call them buddies now. We just met, but we're buddies.
Excellent.
We're buddies.
You ride, you're good with me. So.
Cool, man. Yeah, absolutely. So before the break, we were talking about, you know, one of the coolest things to me about, like, this, your website, and now that this book is coming out, is, like we were talking about before the break, it's just hosting friends and entertaining guests and making them feel welcome and, like, giving them that story. So how many times have you found yourself in a really ridiculous rabbit hole of a story talking about just, we talked about the last word right before the break, talking about what chartreuse is, you know?
As personally?
Yeah.
Oh,
frequently. Well, we're the cocktail nerds among all of our other friends, so
yeah. To a fault. You
know, yeah.
I mean, I've given a lot of people or recommended a lot of people buy that Shackleton whiskey that came out. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come without a 20-minute story, first of who Shackleton is.
Sure.
And, the whole Endeavor expedition and the Nimrod expedition before that, and how the whiskey was made for one, and they changed the name of the boat. So yeah, we go down those. You know, there's way too much context, and I've actually. I think if you look at some of our posts that are, like our the stuff on our Tom and Jerry and that we've...
Hey!
Uh-oh.
Here's our buddy Nick.
Beef jerky time out, guys.
Beef jerky time, man.
So you let Nick just walk into the room?
Yeah, he just comes in. He's doing a beer delivery.
Awesome.
And he's got koozies on every one of them.
Excellent.
That's my boy. That's good job. Good job.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. You're awesome.
There's a story
behind
this.
We just got studio bombed, by the way.
Yeah, we did.
Our listeners.
We dared him to do that, actually. at Café du Monde, I think it was, that it happened.
Have a seat. Nice.
I'm just glad to see you're still alive.
There's a story behind this.
Awesome.
Yes. Well, I'm going to tell the story. Since we're talking about going down rabbit hole stories, let's tell the story.
This is a rabbit hole story.
We met Nick down at Tails this week and stumbled upon him late at night at Café du Monde. And made him join our crew, and we felt like he was that red shirt that joined the Hangover group. It was Leslie and I and Philip DeBar from the Museum of the American Cocktail, and then Nick joined us. And it occurred to me about 5 minutes later that you joined this team really late. We don't know that well.
You're going to
die
survive.
At some point tonight. So.
Well, especially when we started talking about shooting the nutrias on the levee. It was a little shady kind of situation there.
It's not nutria jerky, is it?
No.
Just yours.
Thanks for coming down. That's great.
Nice.
So, we on the site, there's certainly things, stories we've told that are very lengthy and very to the point, like Tom and Jerry and some of those. And then there are other ones. I remember doing we did a drink at David Wondrich's Tombstone cocktail that was from Embiid.
It's so awesome, by the way.
And the story I told was about how Larry McMurtry used to know the Beats and how his cowboy writing was influenced by his relationship with the Beats, and how I think the reason I thought that he went on to write the screenplay for Brokeback was because of his relationship with Ginsberg and sort of trying to fulfill that relationship. So it had nothing to do with the drink. Yeah.
Well,
at the end, I think I said, and it's a good drink.
That's right. Well, the Arab Strap was like that too. We went into the band Belle and Sebastian, and we traced the Arab Strap, and it got into the whole sexual device from the Victorian era. So yeah, we totally do the Alice in Wonderland thing at least half the time.
But you know, that's...
I love that.
Yeah.
But that's
one of my favorites is in Jaws when the captain of the boat he's talking about how, you know, like, we're all out in the water, and every time you like look around, you'd see like one of your friends get pulled down by a shark. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Did you know that that entire story, apparently, the great John Milius, I mean, of action writers, John Milius was the great, the apocryphal stories that he wrote that over the phone, that Spielberg called him up and said, I got a couple minutes I need to fill here, and I need just a really good story. And he, like, just phoned it in. And
he literally phoned it in.
That's
Milius lived in the rabbit hole, basically. This man didn't go down it. He just lived there.
So, nice. No, and, but the fun of having the site is that, you know, we've never taken advertising. We have one partnership, which has been with Villeroy & Boch just for glassware, because it doesn't influence any of our editorial decisions. And when I take pictures, it's nice to have a prettier glass and have different things. But other than that, we have it's always been a free sandbox to do what we want and explore these drinks how we want and to screw up as we want to screw up. And that's kind of been the good thing. And I think that's kind of what got us some traction. So.
Yeah. So okay, so what are some of your favorite, like, I mean, when I go to the beach, I make sure that I always take like a little like Nalgene bottle or something like that, like with a cocktail in it. It's always simple.
Sure.
Maybe it's a daiquiri. I don't know. I mean, like, can't get enough daiquiris.
Right.
I mean, or snackeries.
Well, I have to say, I remember very, very clearly, we have a Hillside in our backyard, and I have this habit of kind of going insane and taking the weeds off of it, you know, and just getting covered in dirt and sweat and everything. And one afternoon, he came outside with one of these big Nalgene bottles filled with Pim's Cup. Man, that was awesome. And it's so easy.
Why would you garden with water?
You can be slugging the Pims down. And we have a homemade recipe for it.
I like to mow the lawn just so I can drink a beer.
Seriously, yeah, with your, like, Boda bag or something, you know? So that's an actual memory, a very specific one I have, for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges in L.A., we drive too much, so you can't be...
Yeah,
that's absolutely
no
true.
No go-cups.
The go-cups don't work quite as well. But no. We have traveled through, what, 5 states now with grenadine. So we're doing these events where we're making cocktails. We did the one in Boston, the one at Word tonight, and we're making a cocktail called the Clipper Cocktail, which came from the old Pan Am runs, and from the North Pacific runs. And it was something that we knew. We could fly into a city if you got the 2 bottles we needed.
3 ingredients.
We got the grenadine. We could whip it up. It's kind of like a slightly sweet martini, rum, dry vermouth. And weren't quite sure that we could get a grenadine on the spot at a bookstore that, you know, we liked, because they're all over the place. We just brought it with us. That filled up half of our 311 bags.
Yeah. So it's been traveling with us since California.
That's interesting. Yeah. And, you know, grenadine is something that I kind of stay away from as a bartender, but I think that's interesting. Like, just because, like, I don't know, I'm afraid of red things.
Well, but here's the thing. That's one of the reasons that the bottle kinds are so horrific. I mean, they look like vampire blood or something, or stage blood, because of all the additives and things like that. The few companies that are good, it's a very different looking drink. You know, if you use the dyed version, the Clipper Cocktail literally looks like Kool-Aid. If you use homemade, it has the softest little blush, like a little baby's bottom.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
I don't know if that's what I thought.
Was that
about
an inappropriate reference? No, it's just a very,
this is
very
a family
soft,
show.
I think not, sir.
About cocktails.
About cocktails, yes.
I think it's really amazing. Like, and, you know, that's kind of like the spirit, if you will, of a book and a website like 12 Bottle Bar. It's like taking one ingredient and seeing what you can do with it, you know? I mean, like, for instance, you know, like you were saying before, honey. How many drinks have honey in them? And then, like, 2 other ingredients.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Just, let's see what we can do. Let's see where we can go. And it's like utilitarian when, you know, when the polar ice caps start melting and the water level starts rising and we have to go inland and we start getting all survivalist. I want to have this book with me.
There you go. We'll be distilling our own booze. We'll have our raw honey we'll be pulling citrus off the trees.
The interesting thing is that when we talk to bartenders, it's like it's just 12 bottles. How can you do that? As you said earlier, they've got, you know, guys saying they have 1,200 bottles. From a home perspective, 12 bottles can seem like a lot.
Yeah.
You know, most people, you know, a lot of our friends, you go to their house and they've got a bottle of, you know, a liter and a half of gold Cuervo somewhere above the refrigerator in the back, you know, behind the Dixie cups. And
Nick does. It's on top of his refrigerator.
And that's pretty much it. So it's 12 seems like a lot until you actually lay it out and you show people. You know, it's like if you bought everything, and we don't tell you to buy everything, we say start with a 1-bottle bar, pick a spirit you like, learn how to make some.
Make sours, make
grog. Learn how to make a punch, make grog, things like that that are, you know, delicious and easy drinking and don't take a lot of work. But if you bought all 12, it's like $200.
Yeah, on the low end, $350 on the high end.
Which is like, you know, 2 drinks in New York. So
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. At my bar, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and they average out to about $2 to $3 a cocktail.
Well, you know, so when I used to work at this little spirit shop called Linnell's in Red Hook. And one of the things that we were challenged with as the employees there, as part of the sales team, is that anytime that we would introduce a spirit, we would have to do presentations on spirits or liqueurs, and we would have to, and gladly so, do this, put together a cocktail sheet, like a one sheet, basically, of like everything that you can do with that bottle. So, and it was right around the time that you guys started your website, and I remember hearing about it from Linnell, and I just thought, wow, that's really cool. This is a really good resource for like what we have to do at work. So thanks. I probably ripped you guys off a few times.
That's okay.
It's okay.
if it got us here, that's what.
And if you heard from Linnell, I mean, come on, couldn't come from better.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
From the mouth to God's ears.
It's not that we don't take inspiration. So.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. We all do. I mean, that's the great thing about this. You know, you've got like so many classics in here and so many modern variations of them.
The cool thing I found, too, is that we were one of the contributors to the book, Jason Scott, from the Bramble in Edinburgh. We just recently opened Lucky Liquor about a year or so ago in Edinburgh as well. And they're doing the whole, not 12, but 13, and they're doing a fixed menu. And I was talking to him about it. He said he loves the challenge. He likes the liberation.
Dude, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I when I'm at the bar, I love it when I have a handicap somewhere. It's like, all right, well, here, you don't like being specific about like an ingredient, and then like kind of taking these other things. Like for instance, I don't have grenadine in my bar, so if I want something that's in that flavor profile, maybe I use pomegranate molasses. Sure. But then I like figure out a way to make all these different things. I love a challenge.
So yeah. Our grenadine has pomegranate molasses.
We reduced it down. So
one of the most fun things we did. It just kind of came up. There was a pomegranate, so we're talking pomegranate, had a contest, a food contest, and for bloggers to, you know, do a pomegranate-based dinner. Right. And I figured, this is a cooking contest, so I'm going to enter it as a cocktail site, right?
Cause nice.
I like to do those kind of things. Because we created a story for the whole
and
evening.
You start thinking about, okay, how many ways can I do this? So we were doing, we took the seeds, the arils, out of them. You juice them, you take the pits out, and we made peanut brittle out of the arils, the pits. We took the white, really bitter part, and made a tincture out of that. We took the outside husks, dried those in the oven, and then used them as smoking chips to smoke a pork tenderloin. So, again, when you're pushed, you try to come up with as many crazy things as you can. So,
God, I'm starving now.
and we gave it context because we also did the cocktails, and so we did everything historically. So we started back sort of with the Adam and Eve and the pomegranate, beginning of time stuff, and worked our way forward. We had a cocktail, which is in the Monticello's in the book, right?
I think it is.
But we did a cocktail inspired by Jefferson called Monticello, and we did a pomegranate ice cube.
Like a spirit cube.
So
it's kind of cool because, you know, it changes the profile of the drink as it dissolves, which is kind of neat.
And added something to it. So
I did that for a punch I do contributing stuff for Bon Appetit, but I did that like where I took a pomegranate and just kind of cubed it all together, froze that, and used that as my ice mold. And it's great because then it totally changes. It's modular. It's like a modular flavor profile.
It's the julep philosophy, right?
Yeah.
It just keeps changing. So.
You know what, guys? I mean, we could sit here in the studio forever, and I'm really glad that we've had the time that we have, but we're actually at the end of the show.
We haven't asked Nick a question yet.
Yeah, Nick.
Yeah.
He looks like he doesn't want to talk right now.
I can talk.
He looks tired. Did Tails hurt you?
It was pretty good, yeah. I think I was out till like 5 before my flight at 9.
That's how you do it.
We left him at the dungeon. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sick. That's good.
I got him in the dungeon.
Yeah.
We made it
happen. So we were there.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm glad I missed this year. Well, David and Leslie, thank you so much for coming in the studio today.
Thank you for having us.
You've been an absolute delight having you in the studio, and I can't wait to crack this book open more. And even though like I'm one of those guys with 1,200 bottles in my bar, I can't wait to see what other cocktails are here. And where are you guys heading to next?
So we do. We have Word Bookshop in Brooklyn here tonight.
Mm-hmm, right.
At 7 o'clock, we're doing a signing, and again, sort of talking about the book, and then we're doing the Clipper cocktail that we mentioned as a tasting, and kind of giving the history behind that drink. Because I think if there was a place to drink a cocktail on a Pan Am Clipper going to Asia in the 1930s, I don't know if you've ever looked at what these planes look like, but they were two couches that you would sit on.
Oh yeah,
and dining cars.
Utter luxury, right?
That's where I'd want to drink a cocktail.
And it was a personal cocktail. Talk about a story, right? It didn't exist anywhere else. That's where you had that drink, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's amazing. Just like the Cooperstown cocktail.
Yeah.
And then we got to find out where we left our son. So. He's somewhere in Minnesota.
Somewhere in Minnesota, probably shaking cocktails somewhere.
And then home?
Yeah, and then home.
Well, great. Well, the book is called The 12 Bottle Bar. It's coming out. It's a lovely looking book, and I can't wait to crack it and check out what's in store. And so check it out. You can pre-order.
Yeah,
right, you can get it from Amazon. Independent bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Urban Outfitters.
Oh, great. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It's a good fit.
And also check out the website, 12 Bottle Bar.
Yeah, and it will continue changing. We're adding new drinks. We're going to be featuring bartenders. So there's going to be a lot of community.
Cool.
Which will be fun.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on the book and the website. You guys have been a great inspiration for home and real working bartenders. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you so much for checking out heritageradionetwork.com. And please go to our website to check out all the other shows and information that we have and become a member, because we all are. That's all I got to say about that. Cheers.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.